Hi, this is Michelle Powers with Angel Messages, the only podcast sharing direct messages from angels. And today I have Emil Harker on with me, and he is a relationship coach and therapist, and he has just wrote a new book called You Can Turn Conflict Into Closeness. And he has helped a lot of people to heal relationships, and today that's what I wanted to talk about is healing relationships, because these relationships continue on even after this life.
Generation after generation after generation.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to it.
You are a huge chain breaker for your family, because I kept feeling many, many men on your family's, on your father's family line, that are just proud of what you're doing and passionate about what you're doing, like very, very supportive of what you're doing, the work that you're doing, the things that you're doing in your life, because you're helping heal relationships. And they're a huge part of your life because of that, because you're breaking chains for them. There's things they weren't able to do before they crossed over, and now you're fulfilling those things, so you're becoming a chain breaker for them.
I think it's really interesting, and you probably experienced the same thing, is I'll ask a couple, and it doesn't matter what the situation is. If I ask the question, what kind of a marriage do you want? They all want the same thing. Mm-hmm. They want to feel love. They want to be able to have a conversation without fear. They want to be able to connect emotionally and sexually in a way that is mutually satisfying. Mm-hmm. They all go, yeah, that's what exactly what I want. And so there's something universal about what we want in terms of fulfillment and satisfaction. Mm-hmm. The thing that I see that is probably one of the biggest mistakes that we do in terms of preparing people for marriage is we don't teach them how to deal with conflict.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't take the time at home to process through conflict. Mm-hmm. We don't do it at church. We don't do it at school. And so we're pretty much left to try to deal with conflict on our own.
Yeah.
So we have two great people with good hearts, lots of love, and zero skill dealing with conflict.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's been my passion for probably the past 15 years, is trying to help people deal with the nitty gritty of conflict. There's so many wonderful books out there about, you know, how men are and how women are, and it gives them perspective and they don't feel alone. You know, you read one of these books that's written by these awesome, therapists, and you walk away and you go, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about, or she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And you feel fantastic, but then what do you do?
Yeah, but now what?
Yeah, well, that's not going to change the situation. How would you suggest people improve their relationships with some of the techniques and skills and the principles that you teach? How do you help couples? Or individuals to make their relationships better?
Both. I mean, I work with a lot of couples, but one-on-one usually, you know, not together.
Right.
And just anyone with, we all have relationship struggles, but I think when I sit down and meet with them, I try to get to the root of what they're really feeling or what they really desire, because I think they really want to have peace and have a connection. I mean, we're all searching for a connection with God, with our family, with our friends.
It's part of our DNA as a human being. We want to be connected.
Yep. And so I kind of teach them to go back to the basics of having relationships, you know, and what do you really want out of that relationship, and how do you want it to be? What do you want your relationship to be with that person? Because I think sometimes people settle. They're like, well, that's just as good as it's going to get. And I see that a lot when I work with people. But I say, well, what if you could have anything that you wanted?
Right, right.
And just like let your imagination go crazy. And they're like, this is what I would do. I would do this and that. And every morning we'd have this and that conversation. I'm like, well, then how can we create that? So we just start to make goals, you know, small goals.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're doable and easy to create in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And And then they just start seeing these changes, and they start seeing how much they can really change their own personal life, and it is more in their control than they thought.
Right. They don't have to just settle. They don't have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created these 7 principles. Now, here's the deal. That's a misstatement. I did not create any of these things. I organized information,
yeah.
Okay? So there are 7 skills of dealing with conflict to take the nitty-gritty, the inevitable conflict, and actually turn it into closeness. And it comes from that place that you talk about, that place of love and that place of openness. Because as soon as we get into a place of conflict where it becomes destructive, we start not loving mm-hmm. the other person. We start
sure.
treating the other person as the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start to defend and protect our delicate emotions,
yeah.
which logically makes no sense. Because out of all the people on the planet, the one person that we shouldn't have to protect ourselves from is the person that loves us. So,
yeah.
Would you mind if I walk you through?
I'd love it.
Would that be
yeah.
cool? And then what I want to do is I want you to kind of help give me some feedback on some of your perspective
okay.
of how this fits with what you do.
Okay.
The first step is called assuming good intent. Assuming good intent is a skill, not so much just a positive attitude. Sometimes we try to be a positive attitude and we just glasses half full, not half empty, but that doesn't help us understand the other person at a deeper level.
Yes.
Oftentimes when something happens, we're miffed, bugged, frustrated, disappointed, we start to see the other person as being selfish, inconsiderate, rude, or mean.
Yep.
And then what do we do? Oh, I don't want to love a person like that. I got to protect myself from that.
Yeah.
We build up our
Difference.
Wall, lob hand grenades over and go, I don't know why she's mean.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to assume good intent is to tell the story such that they are loving, sweet, kind, nice. They're, and if it's any way a bad thing, that they're coming out of a place of hurt
mm-hmm.
or fear.
Yep.
And if they come out of hurt or fear, then we wouldn't need to protect ourselves from somebody who's hurt or afraid, we would love them even
yep.
more. And so there's a strategy of developing that skill of assuming good intent. If I can interpret my spouse's behavior in such a way that it makes them lovable, I'm not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I still have to deal with the situation. I have to still have to, make some decisions or, if my wife forgot to pick up the dry cleaning, something stupid like that. I could be insulted. You knew it was important to me and you didn't care. Oh, I'm not even loved. Or I can go, you must have had a busy day. Mm-hmm. You probably had all the right intentions, but the day got away from you. Man, I'm so glad you got so much done. It's a total different experience,
yeah.
right? So that's number one. Number two is accepting reality, defining and accepting reality. I had a situation where I was being a dad. And I caught myself saying something that was one of the most stupid and brilliant things at the same time. And all parents might have one of these moments. It's getting ready for bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a total chaos trying to get into bed. And I say this out loud. This happens every night. And I was thinking to myself, well, Emo, if this happens every night, why don't you do something different? And so I was like, oh. That was the moment when I started to accept reality. I could define reality. This happens every night.
Mm-hmm.
But accepting reality is when we just start to do something different about it. So if I can anticipate that my spouse is going to think, feel, or do a certain thing or mm-hmm. a certain way, then I should probably prepare for that.
Yeah.
So that I'm not frustrated and disappointed. Because if I mismanage my expectations, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yes.
And if I'm disappointed, I'm not going to be so sweet. I'm going to be spicy.
Yep.
So that's the accepting reality part. The third step is communicating with the desired outcome in mind. In the 1980s, and I don't know who the author was that came up with this, but maybe tons of authors were putting this together. The idea of just being honest with your feelings was the way to go. That was a healthy thing. But people forget that if you're honest with your feelings and you're not considerate about how that message is coming across to the person, you could actually hurt the person's feelings when you're being honest with your own.
Yeah.
So this honest with your own feelings baloney was actually causing more problems than it was solving.
Mm.
So I have a different take on it. We should probably be responsible with our own feelings. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to communicate something, let's think, what do we want the outcome to be?
Yeah.
If I criticize my spouse, what's the likelihood of her going, thank you, I needed that. That's really helpful information. I'm going to make a change. Especially when you're so rude about it, it must be important.
Exactly.
Nobody does that, but they're honest with their feelings, baloney. Mm-hmm. So, and the fourth one in being able to approach somebody is clear, direct, and sensitive communication. I think sometimes when we're afraid, we don't communicate clearly what we want mm-hmm. because then we're afraid that we might not get it.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, we use passive-aggressive, we hint, for example, oh, I sure wish I had help with the dishes. Which is code for, Emo, please come help me do dishes so that I can, you know, finish some other projects. Mm-hmm. But we don't respond very well to passive-aggressive behavior. We usually are insulted by it,
yeah.
and that brings out the worst in us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're not taught how to, you know, bring up issues, we're probably going to step on toes and hurt feelings.
Yeah.
Based on what you've experienced, what are some of your thoughts or feedback on some of those ideas? What sticks out in your mind?
I think the first thing is that we are, as we're using all these steps and doing all these steps, we're really tapping in to what our soul already knows. Our soul knows how to have a healthy relationship and knows truth and knows
right.
how to make that other person feel happy and really connect to who they really are and what their desires are. Because, you know, our relationships, they don't end here. They go on and on and on. In the afterlife, those relationships that weren't healed here, we're healing them there. We're working on healing.
They don't just go away. There's no, like, magical car wash of heaven that takes all the hurts away.
Exactly,
you got to work through them, right? There's got to be group therapy up there.
There's got to be. Group therapy, because they're still healing
right.
in huge ways. And so, but with all those steps that you just talked about, those are things that we have a knowing of when mm-hmm. we cross over, how to have those healthy relationships. We've lost all judgment.
Right.
There's no judgment. They don't sit here and judge us all day
right.
and think, I wish you'd do that better. I wish you'd do this different. It's just they're looking at us with pure love
mm-hmm.
and they see our needs so clearly, and there isn't expectations, like you said. There's no expectations. They're not like, well, if you would do this and this and this, it's going to turn out
right.
better. There's just no judgment, no expectations, and just pure love. And that, I feel like, is...
If that pure love is there, then they're probably not going to have the insecurities. They're not going to have those fears.
Mm-hmm.
But does that give them the skills? What do you think? Because I
with
wonder
with our loved ones, you mean
with communication.
Yeah.
And I know that there's one component which is sometimes they won't you don't communicate with your mouth mm-hmm. and your ears. You
mm-hmm.
communicate without those things,
yeah.
and so you're communicating from your heart to heart to heart. And I wonder if there isn't an evolution to get to a point where you speak from a place of love, because
mm-hmm.
otherwise,
oh,
how
yeah.
do people
it's learned for
right?
Sure. Yeah.
When, Dr. Gottman wrote a little piece from my book. He said, Emil Harker's book, You Can Turn Conflict Into Closeness, addresses the most important problem that short circuits great communication, changing one's own character so that we become better able to love. It's a must read for anyone who's dedicated to loving well. The idea of changing the character was more important than learning tools and techniques.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things is when we are doing these exercises, when we force ourselves to tell ourselves a story of love, we're changing our character.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing things as they truly are.
Yes.
And we can see things as they truly are, well, then we're not going to be so offended.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to protect ourselves as much anymore.
Exactly. Yes. That's probably one of the biggest things that I've learned working with people is that pattern of hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that people are trying to be mean, but they're really hurting inside.
Right.
And so that's the emotions that are coming out, is that they're hurt, and because of lack of skills, they're going to hurt someone
right.
you know, else. And so just to get them to reconnect to their own truth and what is really in their heart you know, and get them out of that place in our head that questions things or judges other people or wants to, you know, ruin another relationship or something. Yeah. Where, you know, if you're really connected to your heart, you just want good for the other person and
peace. I agree. I think when we become secure in ourselves and to recognize our own value, recognize our connectedness to higher power, to God, we don't need to, you know, there's no need to fight, there's no need to push and pull, that we can actually just exist in a place of harmony and love. Mm. But it does truly start, I think, with feeling secure in our and of ourselves,
yeah,
so that we can love better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I have a lot of people that reach out to me that are single, have never found someone, trying, you know, that are, right, you know, in their 30s, 40s, that are like, I've still, you know, never, I don't know how to get to that place and like have a relationship because everything's like on the internet now.
Right.
And, you know, so relationships, I think just even starting a relationship or having healthy relationships, if you could touch on that.
Sure.
And then I help a ton of people with suicide and either struggling with suicide or who have lost loved ones with suicide from suicide, you know, and what your experiences have been with that.
That's good. Let's talk about the dating one. This is another one where people don't get trained on how to do the dating thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they get stuck because they don't want to go through all the bad experiences of dating. So they actually back off and back away from the dating scene.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why they're not finding somebody that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to find the right guy or the right girl, you have to go through a bunch of people to do that. And the internet is fantastic because we have access to so many more people than we did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But we have to date strategically. People date to get people to like them. That's so backwards. Because then we actually end up falling in love with the person liking us, but not with the person.
Right.
They like them, we like them liking us. And then we end up in a situation where we get to know them and we're like, oh, this isn't working out so good.
Mm-hmm.
Now my heart's going to break, so I'm going to try to make it work with the person.
Yeah.
Bad strategy. So the first thing is realize you're only looking for one person, all right? So when you think, oh my gosh, it's going to be so hard. How many guys do you want? Really?
Mm-hmm.
One decent. Okay, cool. So we're out of all the guys, we're looking for the one decent guy. Okay, what are you doing to make yourself appealing? What are you doing? If you want someone to love you the way that you are, where you are, it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the guy's doing the same thing, he's sitting on his couch waiting for you to drop out of the sky onto the couch right next to him. Ain't gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing to become appealing? I coach people, become a person of interest. Become the topic of conversation. Do something with your life. If you have passions, participate in those passions. Develop skills. Make a meaningful difference in other people, in other people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Get out and do things. Well, guess what? If they're doing all those things, they're probably going to meet some people.
Yep.
And then when they do, and this sounds really weird to some ladies, but I say, do not date one person at a time. That's ridiculous. You don't even know the person.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel like they're almost being disloyal if they start dating other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Look, date two or three guys, because I know you're busy, but date to get to know them, not to get them to like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you got to fold laundry, there's your date. What kind of a guy would think that date is an awesome idea? The kind of guy you would marry.
Right.
So instead of, you know, getting all cutesied up and every time you go out, if you're busy, say, look, I'd love to do something with you, but I have a pile of laundry, or I have to get some yard work done. I would love your help. So what kind of guy's going to say? Awesome. The kind of guy you'd want to marry. The kind of guy who doesn't want to do that is not the guy you want to marry.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And the other thing is boundaries, especially with women, okay? Boundaries are a wonderful, easy way to determine whether a guy is a decent guy or not a decent guy.
Mm-hmm.
Simple thing. let's say you're going on a date and you go, I need to be home by 10:30. Okay, a decent guy is, he's looking at the clock and it's 10:15, he's going, I don't want to take you home, but I think it's time. I better get you home so you can make it to bed and have your day tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, sweet, I'd love to go out with this guy again. But what does the other guy do? It's 10:30 and he's hoping you don't say anything.
Yeah.
And then if you say something, you say, oh, but you look fantastic. I just don't want to take you home. You're amazing. You're wonderful. You're fantastic. I haven't had this fun for so long. What they're going to do is flatter you, okay?
Yeah.
Juice you up on flattery so that you go, oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that nice? I better not turn him down for that.
Yeah.
Now, that moment, that boundary is how the rest of your life is going to be. Because every boundary that you make is his opportunity to overcome that boundary. Mm. So simple boundaries, how they support, protect, sustain your boundaries, that's the guy that you're looking for.
Yeah.
But girls don't do that. They try to get liked, mm-hmm. and they try to work through issues. Don't do that. Yeah. Make sure that that's the guy that you want.
Yeah.
And then if he's pursuing you, sweet. It's pretty simple. Show them you're interested. If they don't show interest, you're not interested.
Yep.
You can protect yourself from rejection by believing this philosophy. I do not want to like someone who does not like me. Because mm-hmm. liking someone who doesn't like you sucks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
So they've got to get out. They have to make themselves available. They have to make themselves appealing, whatever that takes. They need to become a topic of interest, whatever that takes. And I think every person knows what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they're afraid to do it. Then they need to date strategically mm-hmm. to get to know them instead of getting them to like you. And then boundaries. Create your boundaries, protect your boundaries, and watch them support them or try to overcome them. And then if you have another person you're dating, then you can easily check that guy off their list because you're not interested in the guy who's not going to protect your boundaries.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, I see people have this like fake relationship, it seems like, and then they get engaged and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, this is my real life.
Now I'm going to be real.
Uh-huh. And yeah. then they're like, wait, this isn't going to work.
Then they think, well, now that we're engaged, we have to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't get started on the right foot.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are some of the ways in which you can create a good start for a relationship. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I think is interesting is, especially in our culture where spirituality and feelings are super important,
mm-hmm.
people begin to make decisions based on those feelings and they trust those feelings and those feelings mean a lot to them.
Mm.
How do you deal with feelings that are a discrepancy? In other words, he's convinced it without a doubt that he's supposed to marry that girl and that girl's like going, I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how does that make sense?
That actually happens all the time when I meet with people. And the thing that I share with them is something that I've learned over the years is that every single one of us, we have our own personal revelation, our own personal thoughts, feelings, desires, and our own free will. And free will is the biggest thing that we mm-hmm. have here. That we were given that gift. I mean, it's something that we wanted when we came here, but we came here to choose.
Right.
Make choices and create the life that we want. And so sometimes it's not in alignment with what that other person wants.
Right.
And it's completely different. It's completely the opposite. But you're entitled to your will and mm-hmm. your needs and your desires, but so is the other person. And sometimes they don't line up.
So this girl might be perfect for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's going, oh my gosh, the confirmation has happened. You'd be perfect for me, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But it may not be perfect for her.
Yeah.
And so she's going, I don't think that this is right. Because he can't get revelation for her.
Right.
I am perfect for you. And if you don't know that, mm-hmm. let me explain that to you. Right?
Exactly.
That's a good sales job right there.
Exactly. So, and I've seen people do that. And
right.
try to prove their point and show
them all
the reasons.
That's not right either.
Because
if it's really true that they're going to be together, well, she's going to feel the same way.
Yep. And I try to show people that sometimes there's just other things that need to happen in one person's life before they're ready for that relationship.
Right.
And so it's not that it's never going to happen, but that there's things that need to happen first before your lives can converge and become one.
Yeah, whatever that happens, if it's right for both of you, it'll be manifest to both of you,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Michelle, you asked earlier about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work at the McKinney Hospital in Ogden, is at the in the crisis work. So when people were suicidal or psychotic, they would be coming to the ER, and I'd be the first line of intervention for them. And so dealing with suicidal people has been something I've been working with for many, many years. I wouldn't say it's my funnest part, because that's a scary, painful part. But I have a different perspective. Because I know that our time on Earth is limited and not the end,
mm-hmm.
it gives bigger perspective to the broader picture.
Yes.
People who are healthy and confident and secure don't kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
People who are scared, people who feel trapped, people who feel stuck, people who are depressed, those people become very subject to a whispering of a dark force that says, look, you're doing people a favor
mm-hmm.
by leaving this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be selfish and stay and be a burden.
Yeah.
Give them the gift of your lack of existence, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say suicide's selfish, suicidal people don't do it out of selfish reasons. They do it because they're trying to be selfless, and they're in a very vulnerable situation where that voice becomes a voice of escape,
mm-hmm.
and then they can get that desperate and do something. And so given that, it puts context into people's concern of, well, if they commit suicide, then that's murder. Okay, we gotta take a step back. That's a symptom. Suicidality is a symptom of a sickness, depression.
Yes. Yep.
It is not a clear, deliberate, conscious decision that a healthy person makes.
Right.
So in their compromised situation, they are going to be judged according to where they are.
Exactly.
And so I can't even imagine a person going, oh, you jerk. You're that depressed. And I just can't see that.
No.
And so I hope that allays some fears that's not the conditions in which mm-hmm. they depart. And the other thing is it's not the end.
Right.
They're now going to group therapy on the other side,
mm-hmm.
okay? So
exactly.
It's not like they're doomed in this darkness. They're getting help by people who love them and helping them make sense and reason with things. I have this feeling, though, that it might be harder to do
mm-hmm.
on the other side. This concept about being on Earth, because sometimes people think, well, if you can get all the help you need on the other side, might as well just go do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the sense that there's something about being on the planet here that helps learning be more effective. What are your thoughts
mm-hmm.
about that?
So the reason why it is so different on the other side to process and heal is because there is no time and there's no space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not what we're used to here. But it's almost like things slow down and go
mm-hmm.
to a different time than we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's just quicker. It's easier to get things done. It's we have these physical bodies. There's
right.
something about having these physical bodies that help us to get things done quicker. But I think something that's really important for people to know is that if we're here right now, I mean, we're really meant to be here. Like, I tell people, if your heart's beaten, if you're feeling things, if you're hurting or happy or any of those things that you're feeling, that those are all signs that you need to be here. You need to be tapping into what your purpose is and what you're passionate about.
And there's a reason why you're here. If
mm-hmm.
you're here, there's a reason why.
Yep.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I was wondering is, 'cause you had this gift for as long as you can remember, and so many people wish they had that gift too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told that we can learn and earn some of these spiritual gifts. I'm really curious to know, what do you do, or what has happened, where the gift gets a little fuzzy and you're not able to? And what are the things that you do to make the gift more crisp and alive for you?
So a lot of people have told me that they wish they could have my gift.
Totally.
Like desperately. And it's been one of the, it's a gift and a curse. It's been one of the hardest mm-hmm. things to have and to know how to use and know how to use correctly. Mm-hmm. For me, I went through a time where I was dealing with a lot of postpartum depression after I had kids, and I had to get on medication, and that's when it was probably, I was the most cut off from my gift, and everything was really blurry, and I couldn't hear, feel, see anything.
Kind of when you were kind of not yourself, mm-hmm. when you're in that depressed state.
Yeah, I felt really disconnected from mm-hmm. who I really am. And if I get too caught up on worrying about what other people are thinking about me,
right.
or how I should be using my gifts, or giving me advice and I feel like I'm doing it wrong, and I get too caught up in my head
right.
about it, then I feel cut off as well. But to strengthen my gifts, praying, meditating, really getting connected personally, mm-hmm. so I have my own personal connection. I'm not worrying about what other people think. I'm not worrying about how everyone thinks I should be doing it, but how I know I'm supposed to be doing it or how I'm being told. That's when I feel the most connected.
So how do you do that with a busy life? Because you got kids, mm-hmm. you got a husband, you got chores, you got laundry, you got the vacuuming, all those things. How do you find time to get in your zone?
I do it every single morning sometimes before I even get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to wake up a little bit before my kids wake up, before it gets crazy in my mm-hmm. house. And I just pray and get connected, and that's my focus, is just connect and listen. I think that's a big factor that we're forgetting or missing right now, is
we talk
all day long.
And then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go off into our normal lives, and we go, I don't know why God hasn't talked to me.
Exactly.
And you're like, were you listening?
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
I have a hard time personally recognizing when God's trying to send some messages to me. Because there are times in my life where I'm like going, I'm getting nothing. It's zero. And then I'll look back in my life, you know, and I'll be going, holy cow, man, he's right there the whole time. And it's like, he's like taps me, like little taps just keep me where he needs me to go. But you know what I really want? I want one of those really cool experiences. So I'm jealous when you get these experiences that are like more than, almost like, for me, it's totally subconscious messages he sends me. Bing, Emil, you need to be going here now. And I'm like, I'm going to choose this on my own. And I have no idea that God just did that for me.
Yeah. No, I think that's how it is most of the time, is that God speaks to us in really soft, mm-hmm. you know, spoken ways, because we're here to have an experience and to learn and grow. And free will is one of the biggest things that we came here to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't feel like most of us, even I don't have these big, huge aha. Mm-hmm. I've just learned to trust my messages and even trust my own intuition. That's mm-hmm. huge. I feel like a lot of people spend most of the time second guessing themselves.
Right. That's a vulnerable place to be, because I can see how if you're kind of worried about the other person maybe not liking or, you know, valuing it,
yeah.
you can get in your own head, and you just got to trust yourself and go, this is what I'm getting. Right or wrong, this is what I'm getting.
Yep.
I think that'd be good for me to learn. I was thinking about times when I feel like the veil gets thinner for me, especially as a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the times when I'm really plugged in and I'm feeling their pain, I'm feeling their frustration. And as I'm trying to piece together what's going on in their lives that are creating some of that pain, these moments of enlightenment come where clarity kicks in. It's like the way I describe it is, you go to the optometrist and you're looking in that machine that has all the different lenses. And as I'm watching them and listening to their story and kind of watching the movie in my mind, I'm looking at it with these different theories and ideas, and it click, 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 and then all of a sudden, the right lens kicks in and I see it clearly. And the reason why I feel like I'm getting extra help is because the ideas, the things that come out of my mouth are not practiced, they're not my own, and they're just the things that I need to say, to connect with them in a way that the light turns on for them.
Yep.
And I wonder, that's probably, is that kind of how it works?
That's how it works, yep. When I work with people, that's exactly what happens. It's like this information comes in, thoughts come in, words, images. They're not from me. It's nothing that I've thought of, you know. They're given to me.
Mm-hmm. But you have to do things. You have to do things to prepare yourself. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm talking to somebody, I'll do something similar. I'll just be praying as I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. You know, first thing is am I coming out of a position of love? Not cerebrally, not, you know, theoretically, but I'm going to love this person with all the love I have right then. And Heavenly Father, what do I say? Mm-hmm. Out of all the many things I could say, what are the things that this person needs more than anything that's going to make a difference? And there's something like, there's a feeling that comes with it. There's this like an excitement, energized feeling that makes me go, I want more of that. That's a good feeling.
Yep.
But I think those are the rules, right?
Yep,
is that
exactly.
How you prepare?
Yes.
How do you do it? What do you do that's different than that?
I just pray and I know how to trust. I don't second guess anything when I'm working with people because the place that you're talking about, I call it the thin place because the veil is really thin and you're so connected and you're getting information that it's from the other side and it's you're connecting with their spirit too.
Right.
So you are saying things that their spirit is wanting you to bring up, bring to the surface, because they need to be reminded of certain things so that they can have these healthy relationships that their soul really wants to have here.
Right. So one of the things that fascinates me about this is I just think what you do with people and the minutes, those moments, those little glimpses that I get, I know maybe it's my fantasy, but I think if couples did that for each other, where instead of going, well, what am I going to get out of this? How am I going to get my needs met? If couples came at it with, you know what, we're all, for whatever reason, broken people. We're all just human beings working through the system, trying to get through it. If we took the time to think, to ponder, to make sure that we're tuned in to the source, and then made sure that we were trying to focus on what we could do for the other person, man, that's
that'd
a simple,
be huge.
It's a simple thing that we could do to make our relationship so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We just don't do that. We're kind of in that natural man area where if I'm not looking out for my best interest and communicating what I need from my spouse, well, then I'm not doing a good job. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to be very helpful. And I'm going to tell my spouse what she's doing wrong so that she can meet my needs better.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they don't say thank you. It's crazy.
No, crazy it's true because when I work with people, what I'm shown by angels and spirits around me is to disconnect from your mind, your, you know, the part of you that is selfish and needy and greedy, but connect and then connect to your heart. So reconnect to your heart so that you can see their heart. You can do the things that they really need and give the things that they need to help them heal and see them for who they really are. That's probably the biggest thing because people get too much in their head and that's when you're not thinking clearly. I think that you just get in that selfish mode. And when you reconnect to your heart, you're able to see that other person's needs and what
in
you
a
need.
Loving way.
Mm-hmm. Love.
I have a question for you, okay? What this is not scripted at all. So here I am, okay? What would life be like different for you if you didn't have the gift? Would you still want to develop that? Or what would be different if you didn't have that, if you didn't even know about it?
I think that I would want this gift if I didn't have it, because I think my spirit would be like, that's something that you need, right, or something that you need to really move forward in your life. I think it would be a part of me that just feels empty. Like, I need that part to fulfill my purpose here. Because I know that my purpose was to come here and to help people. Even when I was little, I was in third grade, and I told my teacher, they're like, what do you think you're going to do when you're older? I'm like, I'm going to be a child psychologist. And they're like, you're in third grade.
Yeah, what do you know about that?
But I loved helping people even when I was little. I loved connecting with people. And I didn't understand the depth of it or how everything was working, really. But I knew that I wanted to help people with their relationships, you know. So I just didn't know how to use my gift.
And then when did you finally go, this is the way I'm going to do it?
Yeah, I started and people just came to me. Even when I was little, adults would come to me and be like, can I just talk to you? I mean, I had my therapist in grade school come to me and say, you just are a really good listener. Can I talk to you?
That's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
So I've always been a good listener, and I'm really just compassionate, and I love connecting with people, right, and being with people. And I feel like I can feel their heart and right, their soul when I'm with people. And I can really see who they really are without all the who they think they should be.
I get scared of these types of things. And it's weird because, well, I don't know why I'd be scared, because there's that feeling of love. But there are people who can be very persuaded. Mm-hmm. And they're vulnerable, and they're searching for something. And the thing that scares me, and maybe you can, you know, help me and maybe help other people that would have similar ideas, is I'm worried that people bypass God to talk to angels, much like some religions do. And they go, well, you know, I'm going straight to, you know, the saint so-and-so. I'm not asking God for help. I'm asking the saint, right, or my ancestors, or my, how does that fit with how you work with people?
So for, I mean, my whole entire life, my connection with God was first and foremost, the most important thing. And I do have people that come to me and say, well, I don't really know what to think about God, and I don't really have a relationship. Right. So what does my grandma think about this? And what can she tell me about that? And so the first thing I bring up to people is that's never my focus, because we need to turn to God first. We need to have a relationship with God. That's the most important thing. And that's what our loved ones want for us too.
Right.
And so I teach them that a lot of times we have a disconnect because we don't trust, and we've never formed that relationship. And just like any relationship, we have to work for it. We have to do our part to have that relationship.
They can trust their grandma because they knew their grandma, they loved their grandma.
Right.
But they don't remember God, they don't know God, so they don't trust Him.
Right. So that's always my first step. The very first step is your relationship with God. Your family members are a huge part of your life, no matter if you're searching to connect to them or not. So when they come to me and they want all these answers, I'm teaching them how to first have their own personal relationship, learn how to trust their intuition and how they can receive their own messages, because it's not about me giving them any kind of message.
Right.
It's about me teaching them or giving them the tools to have their own personal connections.
So you're like a personal revelation coach, like I'm a relationship coach. I like that, because that way now you're teaching, because I want to teach my people that they can handle any situation. And any situation that comes in their life, any frustration, disappointment, if they use the system, the process right, then they can create closeness. Yeah. And you're trying to teach them, look, you don't need to rely on anybody else. I'm going to coach you how you can start to hear and receive personal revelation for you until you get the guidance that you need in your life.
Yep. And then I teach.
We should work together.
We should. And I teach people how to pay attention to all the signs that are going on around them. And sometimes we don't know if it's God giving us these messages, if it's grandma, if it's your uncle, you know, whoever it is.
Right.
Usually I'm told it doesn't matter who is giving you these messages. It is just gifts from heaven. These are your gifts. Your loved ones are trying to help you. Your Heavenly Father's trying to help you. Whoever it is, it's heavenly messengers. And just know that when we learn how to watch for the signs, or if we just feel like
signs.
Yes.
What do you mean? What do you mean? What would be some signs?
So a lot of people get it's for me. I think people give themselves permission to trust signs more than other things in their life.
Right. Right.
So a lot of people come to me and say, "Well, I see the numbers 111 all the time.
Right.
I'm
right.
pretty sure that's my grandma." I'm like, "Awesome. Does it make you think of her?" Yeah. Well, how does that make you feel? Awesome. Like I'm loved.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Right.
So they
might
hear
be a
song.
Symbol or a sign that, hey, someone's trying to connect with you.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah. So I teach people to pay attention to all the ways that we receive messages, because we don't receive messages in just one way where, you know, we only hear messages and that's it.
Right.
We can hear messages. We can feel messages from our loved ones. We can feel our loved ones around us. We can see images in our mind. Mm-hmm. Or thoughts can come to us, or a message can come from someone else that we trust.
Right, because there's more senses than, like, there's a spiritual sense that's non-emotional that does make you feel a certain way.
Sometimes people try to see the separation in everything, and for me, I feel like there's more of a oneness for that we don't need to distinguish everything, that God is love, and everything is really working together to bring us to that place where we're just loving ourselves, loving other people, and seeing the good in everything.
What are some of the personal problems people have that prevent them from being able to, you know, let themselves go? And because there's a level of vulnerability that you're describing that isn't normal. A lot of people have insecurities and fears and worries and concerns, and those things, those are some of the same things that prevent people from connecting personally with people.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine it's going to say do the same thing. It's going to interrupt with. What are some of the personal issues that people have that prevent them from being able to get in their zone?
Trust is probably the biggest thing that I see with men and women. They will tell me constantly that they don't trust. They second guess themselves all the time with their own relationships or with their own thoughts, feelings, their intuition, everything. And so I teach them to try to tap into that intuition more and learn how to trust it. Trust that first instinct that comes to you, that first thought that comes to you. Because usually our first thoughts, not always, but most of the time, it's a loving thought. I should do this. I should probably reach out and do that. But then you start second guessing yourself.
I've heard of that called the heart prompt.
I love that.
So it's just a heart prompt that your first thought is to do something good, and then you go, "Well, you know, I'm tired," or "You know, it's probably not a good time." And then then you kind of talk yourself out of the heart prompt, which that initial first non even cerebral moment is probably the moment that the higher power is talking to us.
I love that, because that's so true. And that's your spirit saying, do that.
Do it.
Reach out and do that for that person. Well, thank you for coming on today and sharing your words of wisdom to help a lot of people just heal their relationships and really find a connection and heal. I mean, basically just heal.
Yeah.
And I really just recommend this book, that you can go on to Amazon and find this book. And do you have any last minute words of wisdom that you want to leave with people?
I think one of the things that came out of our conversation is the importance of operating out of a place of love. And if we do that, if we operate out of a place of love, we overcome our insecurities and we're able to tap into some of the tools that we learn and connect in a meaningful way. And like you said, you know, this is a healing of not only your relationship, but you're also healing the next hundreds of generations.